Today, is it game over for Australia's zero COVID strategy? Melissa Davey is Guardian Australia's medical editor. She lives in Melbourne, Victoria, and right now she's in lockdown for the sixth time.
Yes, I only know it's number six because someone told me it was number six. I've really lost track.
The reason some areas of Australia have had so many lockdowns is because the country has taken a zero COVID approach. The aim is to have absolutely no COVID at all. So if a single case appears in the community, millions of people can be put into lockdown almost immediately.
There are basically only five reasons to leave home. So grocery shopping, medical care.
And those lockdowns, although relatively short, can be extremely strict.
You can also leave home to exercise for a very limited period a day. That's a 2-hour exercise limit. That's about it.
So far, this approach has largely worked for Australia. But the arrival of the Delta variant has changed all that, and cases are rising. With a woeful vaccination programme, yet more lockdowns are the only tool the country has at this stage of the pandemic. And now many Australians are wondering what the exit plan is.
I think, honestly, this lockdown has probably hit me the hardest. I've usually been fine, but you kind of just feel like you've been in a holding pattern for almost 2 years where you're not doing anything interesting, your life has been on hold, you can't really plan anything, and all you have really is work. All the things that made you who you were before the pandemic and all the things you threw yourself into, they're just gone. And just as we start to get back into them again and get hope, you know, we plan events or plan to travel, you just have to cancel it all again. And I think that's been really, really hard.
From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, how Australia lost control of coronavirus. Melissa Davey, you are Guardian Australia's medical editor, and we spoke to you last year about the very different approach Australia has taken to the pandemic from the UK. Australia has followed a zero COVID strategy. What has that really meant for how the country has approached coronavirus over the past 18 months?
It means that we have had extremely strict responses to COVID, including border restrictions, both international border restrictions and even domestic border restrictions as well. So we are very, very strict with who we let into Australia and who we let out. But even in Australia, it's very, very difficult to travel around Australia between the different states and territories. And then on top of that, we have a very responsive approach to any COVID cases. The moment that we have cases announced in the community, so outside of hotel quarantine, that's when we have a very, very low tolerance and we have lockdowns. These lockdowns are usually called quite quickly. They're usually quite strict. And the goal is always to get back to zero cases.
The important news, I think, firstly, is another day of zero cases of community transmission Australia-wide. That makes 61 days this year with no Australian lives lost. And at the same time, we look around the world and we see over 646,000 cases in the last 24 hours and over 9,900 lives lost. And an unimaginable comparison between the island sanctuary that is Australia and the position around the world.
And up until recently, this has been pretty successful. Australian states have managed to get back to zero many times, which has allowed people to live pretty normally outside of these lockdowns. I mean, I remember when we were in lockdown earlier this year, I saw some videos from friends partying in Australia, and I watched things like the Australian Open in the spring, which had all these crowds. And I remember thinking, God, I'd love to be there right now. But this has all come at a cost too, hasn't it? Like you say, those lockdowns have been strict and Australians are stranded all over the world. Has this approach on the whole been popular?
It's actually been incredibly popular. Whenever they poll people to see how they feel about the border policies, even if you are an Australian citizen who lives in another country, even if you get granted an exemption to come into Australia, maybe you've got a sick family member, you might not be allowed to leave again. They're not even letting people leave the country easily. So that's incredibly strict, but people seem to not be too concerned by it. There's a sentiment in the community that, well, by now you know there's a pandemic. You should have come home at the very beginning. Early on, Australia was saying we're going to have these tough border policies. So if you're not home by now, then it's kind of your own fault. And by the way, why would you even think of leaving Australia anyway? That seems to be the attitude. And personally, this is a very personal opinion, but I think it's appalling that we would leave Australian citizens high and dry like that.
Annabelle Hose and her husband flew from Europe to Indonesia 8 months ago, thinking it'd be easier to get to Australia. Instead, they ended up stranded with no jobs, no income, and a baby born in Bali.
We are struggling without the support of my family. Since having my son 4 months ago, I've had postnatal depression, and just financially now we're really struggling.
But other Australians have been left scrambling. A private charter flight has fallen through, and some are hoping to travel by boat to Darwin later this month. One Sydney man is even trying to bring his wife home on a cargo ship.
I just find it unconscionable that we would do this to citizens. Perhaps it shouldn't be surprising given Australia's border policies of the past and the way we treat people coming into Australia. But we do have this very shut down, care for your own on your own land approach.
Australia's had a very low number of COVID cases compared to other countries. Less than 1,000 people have died from it compared to the UK, where the death toll stands at nearly 130,000. Australia has been held up as a global success story by many. Do you think that's justified?
I think definitely we have had a lot of successes. You can't deny that. I think that there needs to be questions about the lockdowns, what was most effective, what was too harsh, because we need to learn lessons from every lockdown, whether you think they were too strict or whether you think they weren't strict enough. But overall, Australia, when it came to COVID, was really successful. But then the Delta variant came along.
A development no Victorian wanted as the second week of Melbourne's lockdown begins.
Well, these new four cases all have been genomically linked to this Delta variant, which is known as one of the most infectious variants that has currently become infamous across India and also parts of the UK as well.
When Victoria was in a lockdown a little bit earlier this year, there were a couple of cases that appeared, but then the Delta variant breached hotel quarantine in Sydney. And on the 16th of June, the first case was announced.
Sydney's latest COVID emergency.
Evacuate now.
But the biggest scare tonight, the city staring down a potential virus super spreader.
This was a driver who transported an international flight crew to their hotel.
He is the airport driver believed to have caught COVID Delta after picking up a FedEx crew, unvaccinated, untested, and possibly unmasked.
Police have spoken with that gentleman. That investigation is ongoing.
The man from Vaucluse has already infected his wife and a woman in her 70s at a local cafe.
On the 25th of June, so less than 10 days later, the Premier Gladys Berejiklian announced that Greater Sydney would go into lockdown. Now, she announced that lockdown after a day of 22 new cases. So that might not sound like a lot to people listening in from parts of the world where there are hundreds of new cases a day, but 22 new cases in a single day were enough to prompt a lockdown in New South Wales. And it's important to say that many people thought that she waited too long to lock down, that the Premier should have locked down when we had those first cases.
Why is it that you think this was the initial response in New South Wales? You know, we've been living through this pandemic for a long time. Had they just not experienced it like this before?
Quite the opposite. So New South Wales had had outbreaks before. And the thing is, they had managed to contain the virus every time and get back to zero by not putting those really harsh measures in place. They still put restrictions in place, but they were more targeted. And many, many times throughout the pandemic, we've heard that New South Wales is the gold standard. They've got the best contact tracers. But I think they also were listening to their experts and they were very strategic in their approach. It's just that this approach is no match for Delta. And I think that there is some legitimate criticism that New South Wales should have known that that approach was no match for Delta, because it's not like we hadn't seen Delta spreading in other parts of the world.
And we've just seen the number of cases in New South Wales going up and up.
At least 80 cases have been reported so far.
Breaking news has just arrived. 170 new cases of COVID-19.
Reported nearly 200 new coronavirus cases on Tuesday.
The army will take to Sydney streets and police will go door to door in hotspot suburbs after the city recorded its worst day of the pandemic so far. Huge surge in cases is seeing 239 new infections. 88 of those people...
The state reported over 350 infections in a single day this week, and some of those have spread into other states.
The Delta variant is surging across the country as we go to air. Almost every state has recorded new infections today. Brisbane is, in the Premier's words, one step away.
How do people feel about this?
There is certainly, in Victoria where I live, a real sense of frustration. We went through a really harsh lockdown and that protected other states.
I just remind you all, we had a ring of steel around Melbourne last year and it didn't just protect country Victoria, it protected the whole country.
So would you like to see New South Wales introduce a ring of steel equivalent around
Sydney? That's entirely a matter for them. I don't want to see more cases coming from Sydney.
And now New South Wales is still not really locked down to an extent that some people would like. And we are continuing to see breaches into other states, and we're seeing states being thrown into lockdown again.
It feels like the theme of the pandemic in Australia for a long time has been control, you know, controlling the spread through really proactive measures, knowing exactly what's going on. Has something fundamentally changed here, Melissa? Is this now out of control, do you think?
It's definitely not a situation that's under control in any sense at the moment. There's definitely a feeling that this is a situation that's continuously moving, that will probably get worse, and we just don't know when it's going to end. I think it depends on so many factors. It depends on how well the public follows public health measures. It depends on whether the lockdown measures in New South Wales are enough and targeting the right places. It depends on how quickly we can get people vaccinated. It depends on whether the most mobile and most vulnerable people are getting vaccinated. It depends on rates of vaccine hesitancy. So there are all these different factors you have to feed into any model, right? And tweaking any one can very drastically change the outcome. But I think you could definitely say that it's uncertain. Well, we don't know whether Australia can now get back to zero.
A lot of the factors you mention are around the vaccination rollout, which is seen by most countries as a way out of this pandemic. What has Australia's vaccine strategy been?
So in Australia, we have two vaccines that we've secured, the AstraZeneca vaccine and the Pfizer vaccine. And because we can produce AstraZeneca onshore locally, we have a much greater supply of AstraZeneca. In fact, we have got almost an oversupply of AstraZeneca, given lots of people just weren't willing to get that particular vaccine. It's the Pfizer vaccine that we've really had to fight to get supply of.
And why are people hesitant about getting AstraZeneca?
It's this issue of the rare and severe clotting associated with the vaccine known as TTS. And when that emerged as a problem, I think that there was some really poor communication around the risk factors of that clotting. We've got a really proud system in Australia of having independent expert health advisors give advice about vaccines. And in Australia, there's a group called the Australian Technical Advisory Group on Immunisation, otherwise known as ATAGI. And they put out advice saying that based on evidence from overseas, it's preferable that people who are under 50 get the Pfizer vaccine just because of that rare risk of clotting. And that everyone over that age gets AstraZeneca because the risk is much reduced in that age group. It wasn't really that ATAGI did anything wrong. They were looking at all the evidence from overseas. They were considering that Australians had a low risk of getting COVID and therefore maybe the risk of the clotting wasn't one that should be taken. But this was all communicated very badly by the Australian government.
Tonight we have received advice from ATAGI in the last 15 minutes. And we thought it was important that we came and briefed you on that this evening, so it was available immediately to Australians.
So the Australian Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, held a dramatic 9 p.m. late night press conference to say that there was this rare clotting associated with the AstraZeneca vaccine.
The advice here today is not to not have the AstraZeneca vaccine. There is not a prohibition on the use of the AstraZeneca vaccine for persons under 50. There is an expression of a preference.
When the Prime Minister holds a late night press conference, obviously the media pick up on that. And some media ran really hard on these big blood clot fears.
Good evening. Australia's trust in AstraZeneca is being tested again tonight, with five more people reporting blood clots after getting the vaccine.
This has led to a lot of people, even in the over 60 age group, being very hesitant about the vaccine. So even the age group that the vaccine is considered relatively safe for, I mean, it's safe for every age group overall, but even the safest age group, those people became reluctant. And as a result of all of that, AstraZeneca has really had a lot of bad publicity that's made it kind of seen as being the inferior vaccine.
Right. So scientists gave some really nuanced advice, which was arguably perfectly valid at the time. And then maybe some of that nuance was lost on some parts of the media after this very dramatic press conference. So the government finds itself in this perverse situation where they have a pile of perfectly good AstraZeneca vaccines, but many people don't want it anymore, even if they are in the age group that was always advised to get it. Now, it's worth saying that the advice around AstraZeneca has now been revised in Australia, and states are actively encouraging people to get it, even younger people. But for some, the damage has already been done, and many Australians want the Pfizer vaccine instead. But the problem, presumably, is that there isn't the supply.
Yeah, it's not even like they can say to people who are hesitant, look, okay, fair enough, if you're hesitant for AstraZeneca, go and get the Pfizer jab. They can't put that message out there. That puts them in a really tough spot. Now, there was a point a couple of months ago where the health minister, the federal health minister, Greg Hunt, said, well, look, if you're really hesitant about AstraZeneca, there will be Pfizer supply available. And he was really criticised for that because people started saying, you're encouraging people to wait. You're encouraging people to wait for a vaccine that's in short supply, that we don't know when it will come in. And when it does come in, there's obviously weeks to wait between doses. So you're not going to be fully vaccinated from the first dose. So there was a feeling that that was a really irresponsible message. But absolutely, you know, that is the issue. The government can't just get out there and say, go and get vaccinated with whatever you choose. The supply just isn't there.
Okay, and what do those supply problems look like on the ground? I mean, if you do want a vaccine, how easy is it for people to actually get hold of one?
It's so mixed. It's really mixed. People are reporting lengthy delays or that they're having their second doses cancelled because they're being redirected elsewhere. Certain vaccination hubs and clinics have excess supply, while others are struggling to get any supply at all. So it really depends on where you live as to how easy it is to get a vaccine in Australia.
Is there any sense that this situation with vaccines will improve? And what impact do you think this could have on what happens over the next few weeks?
Yes, so we keep getting told that there will be more supply of Pfizer coming in, that there's millions more doses coming in, that as that supply issue starts to resolve, then we will start to see people vaccinated more quickly. The government is confident that every single Australian who wants a vaccine will be vaccinated by the end of the year. To be fair to the government, there were some supply issues that weren't entirely their fault. There were disruptions to international supply chains, for example, but that's not the whole story. And I think there are some people who are sceptical that we can get the majority of the population who wants to be vaccinated by the end of the year. But if we get that supply in and if we have enough clinics and staff to administer those vaccines, then hopefully we can get back on track.
Do you think if there hadn't been the blood clot scare around the AstraZeneca vaccine that a lot of the Australian population would be vaccinated by now?
I do. But I also think we possibly could have had the blood clot scare, but better communication around it. These late night press conferences, this poor communication of risk, that hasn't helped things. I think, you know, transparency is a great thing. It's really good that we know that these risks exist. It's really great that we have expert groups who can communicate that and put out advice. But gosh, it's critical to make sure that that advice is communicated really, really well. And that's what we've learnt from Australia.
When the vaccine rollout first began, the Australian Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, kept saying this wasn't a race.
And so, you know, it's not a race. It's not a race. It's not a race. This is not a race. It's not a race. And so the key is, it's not a race.
Since then, he's changed his tune, although he's stuck with the metaphor.
Gold, gold, gold. And then all of Australia, like our Olympians, we go for gold on getting those vaccination rates where we need to go, because the supply's there, the distribution's there, the pharmacists, the GPs, the clinics, and we make a gold medal run all the way to the end of this year. And the sooner we get there, the sooner we get there.
And he needs to, because currently around 18% of Australians are fully vaccinated, which is one of the worst rates amongst developed countries. What is he doing to try and improve this?
So in the last week, the Prime Minister has met with all the leaders of the different states and territories. It's called National Cabinet, where they all get together and meet and discuss their strategy, and they've agreed to vaccination targets. So clearly, of course, vaccination is the way out of this. The Prime Minister knows that. It's just been a question of the supply hasn't been there. And we did in the last few weeks hear him give an apology for that, and an acknowledgement that the rollout had been slow. However, he did make those comments that it's not a race. I think a lot of Australians would disagree. It's now getting to the point that every lockdown, you know, people are affected. They might be affected financially or mentally or kept away from their loved ones for longer. There are people sick and unwell and dying alone or away from family. And all of those factors are really creating this sense of urgency where I think Australians would mostly agree this is a race. You know, we do want to get vaccinated as quickly as possible and we need that supply.
Coming up, is it time for Australia to abandon its zero COVID strategy? Melissa, there's a quote in one of your recent pieces from a group of health economists and epidemiologists, and they say that the more infectious Delta variant is making the zero COVID strategy even harder to maintain. And while on the one hand, Australia can't abandon it, the country can't remain a fortress indefinitely cut off from the rest of the world and periodically cut off from one another. Do you think this moment marks the end of Australia's zero COVID approach?
It's really hard to say. You know, I think that in some ways it's certainly beyond time to start talking about what does life with COVID look like? How much can we tolerate? What can our health system cope with? We know that even once we get high vaccination rates, whether that's 70, 80 or 90%, there will come a time where we have to have COVID in the community. Even with high vaccination, it can still spread. There will always be people who can't get vaccinated for whatever reason. And I think that that conversation is one that we really have to start having. But I have noticed a reluctance to have that conversation amongst Australians. There's a reluctance to engage with that idea that you just mentioned, that this strategy of border closures forever and zero COVID might have to be reviewed. A lot of people are still very happy to lock down, or even if they're not happy about it, they think it's the only way. And I think at the moment, of course it is. I mean, you could not open up Australia right now with the low vaccination rates we have and not see a health system overwhelmed and just tragedy. We don't want that. But there's an unwillingness even to talk about what life with COVID might look like. And I think that is what Australia's downfall is. And leadership on that topic isn't coming from the federal government. So in the absence of that, it's very, very difficult for people to accept that zero COVID might not be the approach forever. But it can't be the approach forever.
Do you think that the feeling is that perhaps the zero COVID approach has worked up till now? Do you think there's any doubt that this was the right way to do things?
I don't think there's doubt that this was the right way until now to do things, to, you know, lock down hard, to try and get zero cases. We don't want to see deaths and we don't want our health workers overwhelmed. But I think that there is a feeling that a massive opportunity has been lost. Imagine if we'd managed to maintain our strategy and have largely zero COVID in the community on top of a really powerful, well-run, rapid vaccination rollout program. If Delta had got into the community when we had high vaccination rates, then we might be having a very different conversation right now. So I think there's this feeling that an opportunity has been lost, that it didn't have to be this way.
On a personal level, Melissa, what is it like to look at pictures from New York or London, where I'm speaking to you from now, which, you know, here we're open, although we have high case numbers, but we also have many more people vaccinated. What is it like to see places sort of look like they're coming out of the other side after months of lockdown? You know, does it get people down to feel like, you know, you've all done everything so well for so long? Does this feel like a step backwards?
I mean, just speaking purely from a personal level, because everyone's experience is different and so, so mixed, but I find it incredibly frustrating that we're not at a point where we can live freely again. You know, I am fully vaccinated. I've followed every public health measure. I've cancelled many trips. I've not seen my family who live in another state for almost a year. I don't know when I'll see them again. They've cancelled trips to me. I've cancelled trips to them. I've had sick relatives that I've not been able to see easily. I've travelled once to Western Australia to see my dad who was sick last year, and I was met by police and I was interrogated and I was, you know, tested and I quarantined and I've done all of that. And I suppose when I look at the rest of the world opening up, it feels great to see. It's lovely to see, you know, that's heartening. But I also feel incredibly angry that there are people who are refusing to get vaccinated altogether, that the supply and the access to vaccinations and the communication of that message has been so bad. It doesn't have to be that way. I'm furious at the international border closures and the tolerance for locking out Australian citizens. And I just find that woeful that we won't let people into Australia or even into other states and territories from within Australia to be with sick and dying loved ones, or to be with a new mum who has postpartum depression, or to be with someone who's getting surgery for cancer. I just find it inhumane. And the fact that there are people staunchly defending policies like that and who can't be creative enough to think of ways to allow people a bit more humanity just makes me so frustrated as I see the rest of the world opening up. I think there are plenty of people rigorously adhering to public health rules and who are vaccinated or trying to get vaccinated who also are starting to say, come on, this is getting to be too much now. There has to be a better way, and we need to talk about that better way, even if we're not ready to open up yet, even if we can't do that and we want to protect people and we can't see the number of deaths that we've seen around the world. We don't want that in Australia, of course, but we've got to at least have the conversation.
Melissa, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Melissa Davey. Read her reporting on the pandemic in Australia at theguardian.com, and also hear her talking about it in more detail on the excellent Full Story podcast. I'd really recommend listening to some of their recent episodes, including how to talk to family and friends about COVID-19 vaccinations, and also postcards from lockdown in southwest Sydney. You can find them at the website or wherever you get your podcasts. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Josh Kelly. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Archie Bland. We'll be back tomorrow.